is and what it's defying, as I was looking for something else. So this is my tribute to Paul Harvey, things I found while looking for other things. And the very nature of what I've discovered since that time has taken me down some rabbit trails. And I want to put a disclaimer on the front of this to begin with. I am going to be talking about some theories of some people that are generally not accepted widely. I'm not sure how sure I believe some of the things that they're saying. But what I wanted to do was present some contrasting ideas that are out there concerning the things that are happening in Israel right now. And this will make more sense later. And, you know, we'll go chasing some rabbit trails a little bit here and there. But I hope this is interesting to you. And it's been interesting to me. I am less sure of what I believe about what I'm talking about now than I did when I started looking into it. So there's a lot of, I want to say, conflicting ideas of what's happening out there. And, you know, God knows what's happening, and we're going to find out someday. You know, the Word tells us that, and we'll do that. So as we get started, let's say a prayer. Heavenly Father, we're grateful for you gathering us here to share this time, to share these ideas. Help us to continue to look into your Word, to discern truth. Help us to be able to understand what it is that we're reading and seeing in your Word and in the world. You are in control. You are sovereign, and I say that without apology, because we know that you made this world and you are in control. Watch over us in this hour and keep us from false teachings. In Christ's name I pray. Amen. I'd like you to turn in your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 5. And we're going to start out. When I started looking into Zion, one of the things that I did was get out my exhaustive concordance. And the word Zion is mentioned in the Bible 163 times. And there's three different Hebrew or Greek words for Zion that are used in those 163. But here in 2 Samuel 5 is the first time the Bible mentions Zion. And we'll start reading at verse 6. And the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who spoke to David, saying, "You shall not come in here, but the blind and lame will repel you," thinking David can't come in here. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. This is modern Israel. This is pretty much the way it looks today. All of these pictures I got off of Google Images, so y'all can look these up. I don't hold copyrights on any of them. Some people do, so, you know, I'm using them for educational purposes here, but I don't think I'm violating any copyright laws. I'll have to talk to Michael when he gets here. But as you see, the Mount Moriah there in the center, and I'll use the pointer if I can find it, is where the Dome of the Rock is. And this is the platform of the what we call the Temple Mount. On one side, running down this way, is the Kidron Valley. And that's a deep valley. And the Jebusite city was on this spit of land coming out south of the Temple Mount. And the stronghold that's mentioned in this verse, in these verses, was located at the higher end of this ridge. The mountain or the hill where the Temple Mount is called Mount Moriah. And it was separated from the what I'm going to be calling the city of David. It was separated by a valley between the two. Wasn't very much of a separation, but it was separated. So at the high end of this ridge of land is where the stronghold of the Jebusite city was. And I'll show you a picture later on. They've actually found some of the foundations of that stronghold in some of the excavations that they're doing there. On the other side of this ridge from the Kidron Valley is what is labeled here as the Central Valley. And that valley was actually as deep as the Kidron Valley is here. And you can see that over the ages, that has all been filled in. Essentially, every time somebody destroyed the city of Jerusalem, they pushed it off into the Central Valley. It had some different names between then and now. If you look on some modern maps, what is referred to on this map as the Western Ridge, sometimes that's labeled Mount Zion. And I'll go into the reasons for that in a little bit. But this area here that's located, that's called the Eastern Ridge or the Old Ancient Core, is where the Jebusite settlement was. It was an area that was walled off, big, heavy, fortified walls, very formidable because it was surrounded on all sides by deep valleys. And that's why the Jebusites thought that they could get away with taunting David and saying, even our blind and lame can keep you out of the city. In verse 8, it says, "Now David said on that day, whoever climbs up by the way of the water shaft and defeats the Jebusites, the lame and blind who are hated by David's soul, he shall be chief and captain." So this is what happened. There's a spring on the Kidron Valley side of this ridge that's called the Gihon Spring. And that's a fairly familiar name with anybody who's really looked into things. The Gihon Spring, it was a gushing spring. It was a fount. And it's described in various texts in the Bible. And it actually was, I mean, think of Old Faithful. Maybe not quite as dramatic as Old Faithful, but periodically the spring would gush and spring water forth. And they had cisterns built in that ridge underneath of the fortress where when the fountain gushed, it would push water up channels and into a cistern built underneath of the city. And then they could draw water from that whenever they wanted to. So David's been found the entrance to that shaft that went up from Gihon Spring up to the cisterns under the city. And they climbed up this and actually entered the city from the water system. And that's how they defeated the Jebusites. And they weren't very kind to the lame and the blind. I mean, it says, you know, David hated the lame and the blind because of this taunt. And that, you know, and this was one of the rabbit trails. When I thought about that, I thought, you know, maybe I had read the story of Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth. Yeah, however you pronounce it. Who was the only surviving son of Jonathan, who was a friend of David's, but was killed with Saul. So this is the only living blood relative of Saul's line. So when David asked, "Is there anything I can do for Jonathan's offspring? Is there any surviving relatives of Jonathan that he can be kind to?" He was told of this son who was lame. So when, I mean, it seemed to have been common knowledge that David hated the lame and the blind as a result of this battle that they had and the taunts that were given by the Jebusites. So I can understand now, when I read that story about Jonathan's son, why he was afraid of David being called in here after David made this vow, "The blind and lame shall not come into the house." That's at the end of verse 8. So, you know, just little things when you understand the Bible as a whole, other things make a lot more sense. You know, why was this, you know, I always read that story and wondered, why was he so afraid of David? David's trying to be kind to him, but you know, your reputation precedes you sometimes. So, all right, back on track if I can. So, this was the area that was referred to as, this was where the Jebusite city was, that's referred to in these verses. The first time Zion is mentioned, David took the stronghold of Zion. That's this area, down here. Now, let me tell you something about this area. Let's turn to Micah, chapter 3. And I'll start reading at verse 8, chapter 3, verse 8 of Micah. But truly I am full of power by the Spirit of the Lord, and of justice and might. And keep in mind, this is where Micah is giving the bad news to Israel, the curses that are coming. To declare Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin, now hear this, you heads of the house of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel who abhor justice and pervert all equity, who build up Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with iniquity. Her heads judge for a bribe, her priests teach for pay, and her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord and say, "Is not the Lord among us? No harm can come upon us." Therefore, because of you, because of these sins, Zion shall be plowed like a field. Jerusalem shall become heaps of ruins, and the mountain of the temple like the bare hills of a forest. This is the verse that we've read. This is a closer picture of the Dome of the Rock. I'm going to skip ahead a few because I want to show you something. This is a picture. It's not a very good picture, and I'm sorry for the quality. But this is a picture kind of that same area that we just looked at. This is the Temple Mount. You can see the mosques up above. And this is the southern exposure of the Temple Mount again. And this is the hill coming down, where the city of David was, where Zion was, where that Jebusite city was. What is that? Plowed fields. This picture was taken in the 1930s. In the 1930s. Up until then, it was utterly destroyed. This whole area was just barren. It was a plowed, it was fields. It's where there were vineyards planted there for a couple thousand years. For about 2,000 years from the destruction of the temple period until about 150 years ago, nobody knew that this was the city of David. And that's why that mountain to the west is sometimes referred to on modern maps as Mount Zion, because that's where the developed city of Jerusalem was to the left of this picture. That was considered Old Jerusalem, and today is still called Old Jerusalem. I'll go back. Now, here's a map that kind of shows the blue line that you see is the modern walls. That's the wall. If you go there and look at the walls of the old city, that's the outline that you have there. This area here was the walls around the Jebusite city. That's the city of David, or Zion. And then when Solomon did his expansions, he expanded to the west and to the north. So that's why these other walls were built in Solomon's time and later as the city grew and developed. This area here is only about 12 acres large, 9 to 12 acres, they estimate. So it was a pretty small area. There were only a couple of thousand people living there at the time when David started his reign. So as the city grew, it grew this direction, grew to the northwest. The Jebusite walls were these. This is hard to do from here. How do you do this all the time? And then this blue is the modern walls, what's there today. And when Hezekiah came back and rebuilt the temple in about 500 or so B.C., these were the walls. Well, this was the wall that Solomon built around the expansion area, and then Hezekiah built this wall, so they claim. The second wall? Yes? The mosque is on this... dotted area is the Temple Mount. We'll get a little bit more into that. So, in my notes and my screens, this is a picture of the Temple Mount today. This is the mosque, the Dome of the Rock, and this mosque, and I've got the name of it here somewhere. And they've both been there a long time. Yeah, we'll get there. I've got it in my notes. But, I mean, the point of what I'm saying is that for about 1,700 years, nobody knew where the city of David was. Now, one of the things that I had a little bit of trouble, I always thought the city of David was Bethlehem. You know, it's called that in a couple places. But no, this is the city of David. This is the city that God led David to conquer. And God said in 2 Samuel 5, this is Zion. This is Zion, this area here. That was Mount Zion in David's time. And there's a lot of verses that talk about Mount Zion. Second Samuel 5:7, we've already talked about where it equates Zion with the city of David. There are several verses in Joel. Joel 2:1 calls Zion my holy mountain, and it's equating that Zion with the temple. Joel 3:17 and Joel 3:21 also kind of equate Zion with the temple area. That's where God lives. That's His residence. That's His holy mountain. And a lot of verses in Psalms. Isaiah 66, verse 20, equates my holy mountain with the house of the Lord. Again, equating the temple with that area. Isaiah 24, 23, the Lord of hosts reigns in Zion. Again, kind of equating the temple with that area. A lot of verses in Psalms. David wrote about this extensively. Zion in Psalm 102, verses 16 and 19, equates Zion with the holy sanctuary and the city of David and the temple. In Psalm 132, verse 8 and 13, it equates the sanctuary or the resting place of the Ark of the Covenant with the Zion or the city of David. I'm going somewhere with this, so don't get too far ahead of me. But, you know, over the centuries following the destruction of the temple and the city in 70 AD, Jesus, in his prediction about the temple, said no stone would be left on another. We read Micah where it said that, you know, the destruction is going to be so complete, your city is going to be like plowed fields, and we saw the pictures of that. But there were always an interest to know in Christianity, you know, even though the Jews had dispersed tremendously and there wasn't much of a Jewish presence in the area, nobody knew where the temple was. As early as the 2nd century AD, a pilgrim, and I can't remember his name and I didn't write it down and I apologize for that, but a pilgrim visited the site, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So this must have been around 300. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre there was actually a Church of the Holy Sepulchre that was built by Constantine, I believe, already on the site. Maybe I've got the wrong Turkish emperor, but there was already a church, and he stood on the tower of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and looked over the old part of Jerusalem, and he recorded and wrote down in his memoirs that there was no sign of the temple. All you could see was the Roman fortress that guarded the old city. More to come. Don't get ahead of me. And then the Arabs, the Muslims, kind of conquered the area, and they built their temple. This temple was built in the 600s, one of the first monument temples that was built by any Muslim organization or group was this, one of the first. It's not necessarily the first. This is considered Actually, the other mosque that's on the site is considered the third most sacred mosque in Muslim belief. The Dome of the Rock and the rock there, and I've got some pictures later that I'll show you of that, is believed to be where Muhammad ascended into heaven from. And that's why that church is there. But when the Europeans came back to try and reconquer the Holy Lands in the Crusades, the Crusaders eventually captured the city, and they took the crescent off of the top of the Dome of the Rock and replaced it with a cross. And one of the conquerors said, "This is the temple of God." And that happened, that occurred, that statement was made in the year 1163, I believe was the year of, I'm sorry, I'm getting away from my notes, but about the 11th century. He said, "This is the temple of God." And that name has stuck to that building, or stuck to that site since then. The Jews have only considered the Temple Mount to be the site of their temples for about the last 800 years, since then about. But even on the Mount itself, there's a lot of discussion about where the temple stood, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But again, the city of David was lost even at that point. Nobody knew it existed. And if you look into the histories written by Josephus, and I'm getting ahead of myself again, but you know, Josephus, who witnessed the destruction of the temple, anybody wonder why Josephus wrote such a comprehensive history? He was commissioned by the Romans to write a comprehensive history of the wars of the Jews up to that date. So that's why his histories were so comprehensive. He wrote about Masada. His history of the siege of Masada is considered to be one of the most detailed and complete history of that siege. His history of the other wars and the other events that happened around this time are considered to be scholarly and well-researched and well-documented and well-accepted. But he talks about the temple and the destruction of the temple and the location of the temple and where things were in Jerusalem at the time, where he was actually an eyewitness to. And there, his history is considered to be not the greatest, because he says some things that don't fit with everything that you and I believe about what's happening on the Temple Mount. He described the destruction of the temple as so complete that you couldn't even tell that there ever was a temple there. That was kind of his words, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But you couldn't even tell that there was anything there. It was so complete, it was gone. You couldn't tell. There was no ruins to look at. There was nothing. It was gone. He also described distances between the Roman fort and the temple, some of which are, which don't comport to what we believe about the temple and the location on the Temple Mount. The other thing that he talked about was the Roman legion that was stationed there. In this corner, off this corner, the northwest corner of the Temple Mount is a building, a palace-like building, that is identified by most as Fort Antonia, which was the name of the fort for the legion in Jerusalem, Fort Antonia. But that building would only hold a few hundred people at most. Anybody know the size of a Roman legion? 6,000 men. And there's some exciting stuff coming up on that. But every place that Josephus wrote about Roman legions, it was considered to be this legion of 6,000 men. Josephus wrote about the Roman legion in Jerusalem, but it's always been interpreted as a cohort, which would be 600 men, not 6,000. So you know, why was he so good everywhere else but wrong in Jerusalem? It's an interesting question to ask. So let's see where my slides are going, and I'll see where I need to be. This is a modern map of the city of Jerusalem. It's, you know, shows the old city, and these are the modern walls that were outlined in blue on that other picture. This is the Jewish quarter. This is the southern wall, which we've been looking at pictures of a little bit with more modern buildings. These buildings were built during the Crusade era and that kind of thing. These were additional forts and stuff. The western wall portion that everybody's familiar with is here. The Mount of Olives is opposite here, and this is the Kidron Valley running down. And again, this is where the city of David, and there's archaeological evidence for it, so I'm not just picking that out of thin air. The area immediately to the south of the Temple Mount is an area called the Ophel, O-P-H-E-L, and it means fortress, or there's a couple of different meanings for that word, but that's by some considered to be the location where Solomon's temple, or not temple, but Solomon's palace may have been, or David's palace, one or the other. And they are excavating this area now, and even in the last couple of years, there's been some interesting discoveries. If you're interested in biblical archaeology, there's a whole bunch of places you can go. So, yeah, let's move on. We've seen this picture. This is the south exposure, somewhere in the 1930s, showing the vineyards and plowed fields. Interesting picture, that one. And this is an overhead map, and it kind of shows topography. Again, the valley here is deep. The valley on the other side, again, was filled in over the thousands of years of conquests and destruction and garbage and everything else for thousands of people living in the area. This next picture is a picture that's just south of the Temple Mount, showing some of the excavations that's going on. This structure above is the Israeli Archaeological Visitor Center, if you will. And there's a lot of excavations and things going on beneath here. But this structure is one of the homes or buildings of the era from the Jebusite city or David's period. There's a couple of structures, some that have been identified as David's palace, that have been found in this archaeological site. Others say it's not David's, but not even Solomon's, but maybe Solomon's son or grandson. But, you know, certainly dates from the time of the Davidic rule, the Davidic family rule. I mentioned the tunnels under the hill to the spring. This actually is a picture of Hezekiah's tunnel. When Hezekiah rebuilt the temple, he dug a tunnel underneath of the mountain to take water from the Gihon Spring. It actually routed a couple different ways. And this is a vertical section of the tunnel, but this actually leads down to the Pool of Siloam, which is right here. This is the Pool of Siloam, which is at the very southern end of that area that I was calling the City of David. This actually was discovered when the city of Jerusalem was installing a sewer system. And they came across these steps. There's multi-tiers of steps here. And it, you know, this is a wall of dirt, so it hasn't all been excavated yet. But it was a very large pool, and you know, even in modern times, we'd have considered it a nice pool. And the different tiers, they think, were built to accommodate the different water levels that might have been existing at the time. This is where Jesus sent the blind man after he covered his eyes to go wash in the Pool of Siloam and then present yourself to the temple. This is the pool that he sent the blind man to. neat things they've been, and this was only found less than 20 years ago. Sorry. Less than 20 years ago. And this is the base of the city walls of the Jebusite city, looking down from the Kidron Valley, looking up at the hill. So you can see what a formidable, you know, if that's surrounding the entire city, what a formidable job it would be to get in. Now I want to talk about the Roman fort a little bit. You know, the Romans were pretty expansive in the area. And, you know, even in England, they were very regimented when they came into England and built forts and stuff there. The English have developed, this is a picture, drawing, a depiction of what a typical Roman fort for a legion is. You can see here the barracks. It's a completely self-contained. Josephus described the Fort Antonia as being like several large cities. Inside the walls, the area was 35 or 36 acres to house the 6,000 men and the 4,000 support staff that supported the Roman legion. In the center were buildings that typically were the administrative buildings and the praetorium, which is essentially where all the trials took place, which is an interesting point, and I'll come back to that if I don't make me. This actually is the... that's the wrong one. I'm missing a fort. Yeah, maybe it's in the wrong place now. This is the Roman fort at Masada. These are the remains. They've been extensively excavated to determine things and stuff. But you can see the outline of the fort. And in the center is where the praetorium and the administrative buildings were. And the interesting thing about this, the dimensions of this fort, and I had a picture with a similar view from a fort, the remains of a fort in England. There was a full legion here. There were full legions at a couple of the forts in England. And if you lay them on top of each other, they match. They had one plan for their forts. They had one plan for a cohort. They had one plan for a legion. They had one plan for a marching army. And almost every ruin that you find of the Roman forts and fortifications are similar to this. Sometimes they were adapted to the terrain, but generally this is the shape. Now somebody smarter than me and better with graphics than me took this fort and superimposed it on the Temple Mount. And here's what they found. This is spooky. It matches exactly. So some believe that the Temple Mount wasn't the Temple Mount at all, but rather was built up and established as the Roman fort of Antonia. I don't know. That would mean that the Western Wall was simply the foundation of a fort and not anything to do with the temple. And that would mean that the temple wasn't located on here at all, because there wouldn't be room for the temple and a 6,000-person Roman legion. I don't know. I'm going to go back to another slide, because I want to talk about some of the different opinions of where the... Okay, this is a good one. Here you see the outline of the Temple Mount. There's a mosque. This is where the Dome of the Rock is. This is where the other mosque is, and I've got the name somewhere, and I'm not going to be able to find it quick, so I'll skip it. And this is the city of David coming out from the south below it on that ridge. The traditional site of the temple is on the Dome of the Rock. Or is at the same location as the Dome of the Rock temple is. You know, this has been, you know, I talked about it, 1169 is the year that the guy declared this is the temple of God. You know, there are several people who I researched. You know, there's one of them is Robert Cornock. Don't know how to pronounce his name exactly, but he's has some, a lot of this stuff is coming from his writings. Norma Robertson is another who expanded on somebody else's writings to determine that the temple was not on the Temple Mount, but has a different location than Robert Cornock. And I'll show you where those locations are. So the traditional site of the temple is right here where the Dome of the Rock is. There's also a small, can't really see it here, and I apologize for the quality of the screen. There's a small building that they call the Al-Qas Fountain. And I'm sorry, the Al-Qas Fountain is down here, which is another location where people think the mount might be. In between the mosque, the Dome of the Rock, and the other mosque that's located on the site. There's trees here, and I'll show you the Temple Mount picture again, and you can see that it's kind of largely undeveloped. The other place on the Temple Mount that they think the temple might have stood is over the Dome of the Tablets, which is an interesting name. It's also referred to as the Dome of the Spirits, and that's what's located up here on the north side. And the other location is at this mosque here, and I finally found the name. That's the Al-Aq Mount, or the Al-Aq Mosque, and that's located down here. Now, Norma Robertson, in her writings, says that the observations of contemporaries that were there and saw the mount said that the Jewish fort was about 600 feet by 600 feet, which would encompass the north half of this square. And she claims that the south half of the square and another 600 by 600 feet, that's 400 cubits, by the way. So if you're looking in the Bible and you see the 400 cubits, that's about 600 feet. That the temple was located either here, or she actually thinks it may have been located off of the south edge of the fort, and has some archaeological evidence to support her theories. Kind of an interesting thing, but she doesn't believe at all that it's located anywhere near the Dome of the Rock. So we had four, did I go over all four sites? The Al-Aq Mosque, the Al-Qas Fountain, which is in the center between the two mosques, the Dome of the Tablets, or the Dome of the Rock, are the four locations on the mount. And then, again, Norma Robertson says that it actually was built, that the south wall was a common wall between Fort Antonio and the Herodian Temple. When Herod expanded the temple, he actually expanded it right up to the same wall as the fort. There are other theories as well. Of course, there's also one theory that I ran across that said God didn't tell him to build a temple at all, so it doesn't really matter. I'm not sure I'm cool with that one. But Robert Cornock says that the idea of the threshing floor, that David, when David bought the threshing floor from the Jebusite, okay, they just conquered the city, and David said, okay, God, where do I put the temple, the tabernacle? And God said, well, buy the threshing floor from the Jebusite and put it there. according to historical practice, I guess I could say, that threshing floor probably would have been within the confines of the city of David. But again, that's a pretty small area, so I don't know. I wasn't there. Haven't been there. But it was nearby, at least. Another one of the practices, and I'll show you a picture of a typical threshing floor, and as we get into the next couple pictures, well, after I get back to where I was. All right. This is the Dome of the Rock. This is the rock. And you can see all the depressions. There's, you know, if you get better pictures than I've got, you can see crosses carved into it. This is located right under the Dome of the Rock. And if you remember that picture of the fort, that would be approximately in the center where the administration buildings or the Praetorium. There are some who believe that the Praetorium was built over this, and that when Jesus was tried before the Romans, he was standing on this rock when he was tried. I don't know. But you can see the irregularities in this rock. And some of them were carved in, obviously. The next slide I've got kind of shows a picture of the Holy of Holies superimposed over that, showing possibly where the Ark of the Covenant stood, where the walls were. And you can see that clearly this rock is a whole lot bigger than the space and the dimensions given in the Bible for the Holy of Holies. So it's kind of hard to imagine building something flat over that area. And it's also hard to imagine. People say that this was the threshing floor that David bought. And here's a threshing floor.